Chapter 4, The Egyptians. The next great nation to be considered as being contemporary with Bible times is that of the Egyptians. These were descendants of Mizraim, one of the sons of Ham, Genesis 10, verse 6, and their land was called by the Hebrews the land of Mizraim. See Genesis 1, verse 11. The great line of pharaohs who exercised sovereignty over this land has been traced back to the first dynasty or group of pharaohs commencing about 3300 BC, and many of their stupendous buildings and monuments remain to this day, testifying to the height to which their civilization attained. The step-shaped pyramid of Saqqara, already referred to, was built in the second dynasty by the sons of Ham as they migrated from the Tower of Babel, which was also of stepped formation. Later on, the steps in the sides of the pyramids were filled in so that perfect pyramids were formed, such as the three enormous ones which still exist at Giza and were built in the fourth dynasty, the largest of them by Pharaoh Khufu or Cheops. These pyramids were constructed to be the tombs of the pharaohs who built them, seeking by this means to make a name for themselves, as did their forefathers at the Tower of Babel. The first 11 dynasties of Egypt comprise what is called the Old Kingdom, the capital of which was at Memphis. During the 12th dynasty of pharaohs, the glory of Egypt rose to a great height, which commenced the Middle Kingdom, having its capital at Thebes and extending southwards into Ethiopia, or the land of Cush, another son of Ham, Genesis 10, verse 6. It must have been about this period that Abraham descended into Egypt to escape the famine in the land of Canaan. Why was it that food could be found in Egypt while famine raged around? The reason is the same as that which exists to the present time, namely, that the fruitfulness of Egypt was due to the annual overflowing of the river Nile, spreading fertility on either side, whereas other lands were directly dependent on the rain of heaven, the withholding of which occasioned the famine. Egypt is thus watered by the foot, Deuteronomy 11, verse 10. The feet being used to form irrigating channels to take the river's overflowings. The Bible narrative of Joseph and his brethren provides perhaps the greatest insight into the life and customs of the Egyptians of those times. The period of Joseph would seem to coincide with what is called the Hyksos period of the Egyptian history, when a foreign nation of Semitic origin called the Hyksos or Shepherd Kings invaded and took possession of the greater part of Egypt, particularly in the region of the Nile Delta, where they set up their capital at Avaris and called their rulers by the Egyptian royal title of Pharaoh. The probability that these Shepherd Kings were then in power is very interesting when considered in connection with the welcome extended by the ruling pharaoh to Joseph's brethren, who were also shepherds. Hence, Joseph's speech to Pharaoh, "My brethren and my father's house, which were in the land of Canaan, are come unto me, and the men are shepherds, for their trade hath been to feed cattle." So also he instructs his brethren what to say to Pharaoh when he should ask what was their occupation. They were to reply Thy servant's trade hath been about cattle from our youth even until now, both we and also our fathers. And this was to the end, that they might dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination unto the Egyptians. Genesis 46, verses 31 to 34. That is, to the true or original Egyptians. The shepherds were hateful as having invaded their land and usurped the throne. And so the children of Israel must dwell in the land of Goshen. The successful invasion of the Hyksos is thought to have been due to their use of horses and chariots, which they introduced into Egypt. And it is evident that these existed when Joseph was in Egypt, as he commanded his chariot to be made ready when he went up to meet his father. Genesis 46, verse 29. But we must go back upon the history of Joseph. By a false accusation, he had become cast into prison, and there he met with Pharaoh's butler and baker, and interpreted the dreams of each of these fellow prisoners. The baker, in relating his dream, speaks of carrying three white baskets on his head, in the uppermost of which there was all manner of baked meats for Pharaoh. Genesis 40, verse 17. In this connection, it is interesting to note that there is in the British Museum a model of an Egyptian bakery, which was discovered in one of the tombs, and in which some of the bakers have these baskets of baked meats on their heads. After a lapse of time due to the butler's forgetfulness, Joseph is summoned before Pharaoh in order that he may interpret the king's dreams. And it is said that he shaved himself and came in unto Pharaoh. Genesis 41, verse 14. This act of Joseph was not merely to make himself more presentable after his imprisonment, but illustrates the fact, which is borne out by the ancient records, that no one was allowed to wear a beard in the presence of the Pharaoh. This was one of the insignia of royalty in Egypt, and the characteristic narrow beard from the chin may be seen on all the monuments of the pharaohs. The following inscription, describing an audience with the reigning pharaoh of his day by an Egyptian named Sinuhi, will illustrate the majesty which attended these monarchs. "I touched the ground," he says, "between the sphinxes with my forehead, and the royal children stood in the gateway and received me, and the chamberlains that conduct to the hall set me on my way to the privy chamber. I found his majesty on his great throne in the golden gateway. When I stretched myself on my belly, my wits forsook me in his presence, albeit this God addressed me kindly. I was as a man that is carried off in the dusk. My soul fled, my body quaked, mine heart was no longer in my body, and I wished not whether I was alive or dead. Then said his majesty to one of these chamberlains, 'Raise him up, let him speak to me.'" Bikie's History of Egypt, Volume 1, page 299. So, after the interpretation of his dream, the pharaoh, perhaps himself of Semitic extraction, advances Joseph to be lord over all Egypt and to have charge of the storage of wheat against the predicted time of famine. The fact of the existence of severe famines in the land is evident from its historical records. The history of Egypt shows that in all periods the country has suffered from severe famines, which have been caused by successions of low Niles. Thus, A terrible 7 years famine began in 1066 AD and lasted till 1072. The people of Cairo killed and ate each other, and human flesh was sold in the public markets. In Genesis 41, we have another example of a 7 years famine, and still an older one is mentioned in a Ptolemaic inscription cut upon a rock on the island of Sahal in the First Cataract. According to the text, this famine took place in the reign of Zoser, a king of the Third Dynasty, about 3000 BC, because there had been no satisfactory inundation of the Nile for 7 years. It says that by reason of this, grain was very scarce. Vegetables and garden produce of every description could not be obtained. The people had nothing to eat, and men were everywhere robbing their neighbors. Children wailing for food. Young men had no strength to move. Strong men collapsed for want of sustenance. And the aged lay in despair upon the ground, waiting for death. General Guide to Egyptian Collections, British Museum, page 13. During the time of famine, Joseph's brethren came into Egypt to buy corn. And eventually he makes himself known to them, and they come with their father Jacob to dwell in the land of Goshen, as already mentioned. In the course of time, Jacob dies, and we read that Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father, and the physicians embalmed Israel. The embalming of the dead amongst the Egyptians is so well known a fact, and so attested by examples of mummies in the museums, that no further confirmation of the veracity of the Bible record in this respect is necessary. In some Egyptian inscriptions, the number of days allotted for embalming and burying are stated. In one recorded case, the time for embalming was 66 days, and the burial occupied 30 days. In the case of Jacob, we have a similar record, and 40 days were fulfilled for him, for so are fulfilled the days of those which are embalmed, and the Egyptians mourned for him 70 days. In the same way, the body of Joseph was embalmed at his death. So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. The time of Joseph's death would about correspond with the commencement of the 17th dynasty, when the original or native Egyptian rulers were beginning to establish a rival throne at Thebes. So that in the course of about 50 years from the commencement of that dynasty, they were able to expel the invading Hyksos and re-establish the Egyptian supremacy, with the true Egyptian pharaoh reigning over the whole of Egypt from the Theban throne. The shepherd kings, friendly to Joseph and his brethren, now no longer existed. How remarkable in this connection is the statement in the first chapter of Exodus, "Now there rose up a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph." Weakened as were the true Egyptians by the long oppression of the Hyksos, and they had now to say, "Behold, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we. Come on, let us deal wisely with them, lest they multiply, and it come to pass that when there falleth out any war, they join also unto our enemies and fight against us." What more natural than that the Egyptians should fear lest the Israelites should join in hand with the Hyksos, our enemies, who had in so friendly a manner allowed them to become established in the land of Goshen. Thus commenced the long bondage and oppression of Israel, which must have occurred in the 18th dynasty during the rise of the new kingdom, in which the glory of Egypt reached its zenith. The expulsion of the Hyksos was followed by invasion of Canaan and Syria, and the extension of the Egyptian empire even to the borders of the Euphrates. This was largely effected by the pharaoh Thutmosis, or Thutmes III, who was the greatest of all the pharaohs, reigning for about 53 years. During their oppression, the Israelites were kept at work in brick-making for Pharaoh's building operations, and from the description in the book of Exodus, it is evident that straw was necessary in the making up of bricks in Egypt. And in confirmation of this, the following statement from the British Museum Guide is interesting. The art of brick making appears to have been introduced into Egypt by the people who entered the land in the late pre-dynastic period, and who eventually conquered it and settled down in the country. They came from some part of Western Asia, and it is thought that they may have been related to the dwellers in southern Babylonia, where the art of brick-making had attained a high pitch of perfection. Babylonia contained large masses of a peculiar kind of clay, which was eminently suited for the making of bricks, and the earliest Babylonian bricks known to us are baked and stamped with the names of the kings who had them made. The mud of Egypt was not very suitable for the making of bricks of a large size. Hence, Egyptian bricks are relatively small, and it was found necessary to mix chopped straw, or taben, and reeds, hair, etc., with the mud in order to bind it together. Guide to 4th, 5th, and 6th Egyptian Rooms, pages 199 and 200.